it's the number one threat because it's going to be in every single country. You can't escape it. And you won't be able to buy or sell it. I mean, they're going to get rid of cash. And then you literally, if you commit a thought crime, I mean, you have to be ideologically aligned with the regime. So whether it's you don't wear masks, you don't follow the corona or climate narrative or LGBT or war, you know, and the list is going to get longer, they'll just shut you off.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, in a conversation that is being recorded in late August of 2023. And I've got a special treat lined up for you today. A very particular recommendation for people who have not yet checked it out. And that recommendation is to the website / podcast / blog / associated radio show, Geopolitics and Empire at geopoliticsandempire.com. I recommend it because I get a lot out of specifically the podcast, but the associated materials as well. So joining us to talk about Geopolitics and Empire is the founder and host of Geopolitics and Empire. And I will confess, I have spent days, if not weeks, fretting about this interview because I knew there would come a point in it in which I would have to pronounce your name. But then it occurred to me, why don't I just get you to pronounce it for us, Mr. Morich?
Yeah, it's really easy. You know, Hrvoje. Hrvoje.
So you're rolling R's already, so already it's going to be Hrvoje. okay. You'll forgive my Anglophone ignorance, but I just didn't grow up with a lot of Croats, so I don't have a lot of experience with that name. Although I do find it absolutely fascinating how even Anglophones have an incredibly difficult time pronouncing my name, which doesn't seem that particularly difficult, but you would be surprised how many people pronounce it like James Corbett, as if I am Croat or something. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Well, now that silliness is out of the way, Hrvoje, it's good to have you on. And as I say, I have been listening to Geopolitics and Empire for a couple of years now. I do not recall, so please don't ask. I really don't remember how I first came across your podcast specifically, but I'm glad I did. Specifically, and let me say why I recommend this podcast, it is because I don't always agree with what your guests are saying. You bring on a lot of guests from a lot of different perspectives, including a lot of guests that I don't hear making the rounds in a lot of other alt media places. And I appreciate that because as someone who does this, I do try to bring on new voices and get people introduced to new things. But I know it's very easy to fall into the trap of just talking to the same people that everyone's already heard before. You do not do that. And I do appreciate that. So let's set the table for this conversation. Tell people what Geopolitics and Empire is, and then let's talk a little bit about how you came to start it.
Yeah, I mean, the way it basically started, by the way, I've seen you picking up, you know, what I try to do is get guests that I've never heard of. You know, early on, I've interviewed like Riley Wagaman and then Roluslavsky and then, you know, a lot of people. Then, you know, they're going on other programs. So basically, Geopolitics and Empire was born, let's say around 2012. So I came to Mexico 2010 to teach at the Tecnológico de Monterrey, which in hindsight, I'm realizing now the Tec de Monterrey is the top high school university in all of Mexico where the millionaires send their kids. But then I've discovered that it's officially linked to the World Economic Forum. And it's the only university in all of Latin America that actually goes, attends Davos. And so somewhere in the early, you know, 2010s, I wanted to talk about these subjects with people, you know, and most people are mediocre, you know, it's a sad truth, but I was trying to talk to my coworkers. I was teaching history, economics, politics, and no one really, you know, they just clock in 9 to 5 and go home. And I'm like, I want to talk about what's really happening in Syria and the Great Reset and all this. And nobody cares. So my trick was, hey, why don't I invite the people that I want to talk to into my classroom, Skype them in, and then record that and then throw it up on YouTube. So that's like a great pretext for me to get to talk to some of these people. And then, you know, and this is just encouragement for people out there. Just try it and be persistent. You just never know what's going to happen. And so early on, I'm getting like Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, you know, Ray McGovern, retired CIA, James Bamford, Lord Christopher Monckton, you know, all these sorts of people. And then by 2015, 2016, initially I called it, because I was flying by the seat of my pants, it was called Guadalajara Geopolitics Institute. And then 2015, I kind of really branded it Geopolitics and Empire, because that's kind of my themes are like empire, world government. Basically, for me, empire is the synonym for world government, which is my focus, and globalism. And geopolitics is more like the science of politics, you know, which includes for me demographics, technocracy, economics, cultural warfare, and all of that. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I got started.
Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit more about your own personal background. I know you've had some interesting experiences in the Peace Corps and in various locations around the world. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I got three passports. I'm pretty diversified now. I was born in Chicago, but my parents were Croatian immigrants. And by the way, my name literally transliterates as Croat. So it literally means Croat. And so I was raised between both worlds. So we spent many months every year going to Croatia and then back to the U.S. And then I went to school some years in Croatia, back and forth, back and forth. And then I eventually decided, once I learned about, once I fell down the rabbit hole, right, you know, 9/11, Federal Reserve, all that stuff. I learned America was an empire. That was a shock for me. And by the way, I mean, you've been listening, you said, to G&E for a couple of years. I've been listening to you for probably since you started. So I just decided to permanently expatriate from the U.S. And my ticket out was Peace Corps Mongolia. So I finished my bachelor's in history education. And I'm like, I'm looking around, how do I get out of the empire? And my ticket was JFK's Peace Corps to Mongolia. I fell in love with Mongolia because of this great documentary called Genghis Blues. People can check it out. And yeah, I was in Mongolia, lived in the yurt. I left early and then came back for a while and just read a lot of books and then decided to go do my master's in Geneva at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. And then there I studied under folks like Saddam Hussein's defense lawyer, Alfred Isaias, Yasser Arafat's brother-in-law, people like this. And so once I finished, I was like, the world is my oyster. And I was applying for jobs. I want to go anywhere. Alaska, Afghanistan, back to Mongolia, Saudi Arabia, and Mexico came up and they accepted me. And, you know, the rest is history.
Excellent. And how long have you been in Mexico now?
2010, I became a citizen in 2018, and then from 2017, that you know, that's another story. I got offered a job to teach in Kazakhstan. So for four years, I was teaching at Nazarbayev's. Technically, Nursultan Nazarbayev was my employer. Technically,
I'm assuming you didn't have a lot of close collaboration with him, though.
No, it's just really one way with him. Just
but, yeah, but you did meet Gorbachev.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so right before I left for Kazakhstan, I went with Sharon Tennyson. She's great. She's got the Center for Citizens Initiatives. She's been doing U.S.-Russia peace diplomacy since the 80s. And I wanted to take part in that trip for 3 weeks. I went with Rick Sterling. Actually, the year before that, Ray McGovern had gone on the trip the year before that. And we got to meet Gorbachev for 2 hours at his foundation in Moscow. Vladimir Posner, who's a well-known figure, and others. And you know, it's a funny fact, though, because for my graduation in 2009 in Geneva, the honorary doctorate was for Gorbachev. And he was supposed to come to my graduation. But he was, I guess, for medical reasons, he couldn't. So I found him in Moscow. So, yeah, I've met interesting people. I met Ron Paul recently in Texas. Actually, next week I'm going to see him again. And then, you know, just along the way, you know, I've had, you know, G. Edward Griffin, that everyone knows. I had the honor of him taking me out to lunch in 2011 because I was a volunteer for his info Unfiltered News for a while. So that was sort of his way of paying me back.
Wow. And I note on your about page, your bio page on geopoliticsandempire.com, that you have pictures, for example, hanging out at the World Health Assembly in 2009 during the swine flu pandemic. You also have a picture of a conference across from the UN Geneva with occult pyramid microphones, which for people who are listening to this conversation, I suggest you go and take a look at that picture because that seems pretty occultish. And there it is.
Just wow. The story on that. So while I was in Geneva, I was a staff assistant for the Czech Republic mission to the EU. Was it? No, UN. And that's why I was at the World Health Assembly. And right across, you've got the office of Lutz's Trust. I'm sure you're familiar with Lutz's Trust. So I attended one of their meetings. You know, I don't want to be like with all my friends and family, this wacky, you know, conspiracy theorist, something like, who, you know, reads stuff off of forums. I'm like, No, I went to their meeting. I've got the pamphlet somewhere. In the pamphlet from 2009, it talks about Satan being Prometheus and bringing fire, you know, from heaven to man. And so, and then in that conference building, all of the speakers, as you can see, are pyramids. You know, what a coincidence. And then when they turn on, the top of the part turns red. It's crazy.
That, yeah, that doesn't surprise me, but it is crazy to see that photographic evidence. Well, with a bio and a background like this, you know that people in these circles must already have flags and hackles going up. Who is this guy? How do we know he's not one of them? Tell us a little bit about your philosophy when it comes to this type of information.
Well, I mean, I'm not shy about it. I'm just, my view is biblical. I'm a Christian, and so yeah, I basically, like, a non-denominational Christian. So my view, people can extrapolate. It's you know, conservative Christian worldview, and so I lean a lot on prophecy as well. That's where I get my focus on, you know, world government and the beast system, right? What we're seeing now, the whole digital ID and CBDCs, and so that's sort of my philosophy, and then people can just kind of extrapolate from there. But I'm basically anti-globalist, right? Anti-empire, for small government. It's funny, the other day I got an email from my TNT radio show. Someone says, are you a voluntarist anarchist like James Corbett? So that was pretty funny. They asked me that. So I'm not quite an anarchist or let's say libertarian, but I'm libertarian-ish. You know, I like the majority of the principles of voluntarism and libertarianism and stuff like that. But I don't have qualms with, you know, having a small government, you know.
Well, as I alluded to earlier, one of the things that I like about your podcast is that, yeah, you have your views and you have your own perspective on this, but you certainly don't let it commandeer the conversations that you have. And as I say, you talk to a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives, some of them quite controversial within the alternative media circles, mainstream normie types, as well as people more on the fringe, however you would define that. So I'm assuming I don't know, but I'm assuming there is some sort of deliberate thing that you do to sort of not inject your opinion on the guests. You let them talk. Correct me if I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can. That's part of my personality. Part of it is, you know, diplomacy, having studied at Geneva School of Diplomacy. And my, you know, initially my name, I didn't even put my name on my website. It was just Geopolitics and Empire. And people were just like annoying me with, like, what's your name, who you are? And then I realized, okay, you got to kind of let people know who you are, and because it wasn't about me, it's about the guest, the expert, and I want to get their, like, memory dump, right? Their data dump. You know, I've got guests on, I'll give an example, you know, Eve Engler, the Montreal activist, left-wing guy. And again, it's like you say, I don't agree with everything my guests say. Sometimes it can be I agree very little, you know, and I never know what they're going to say, but I'm on point with Eve when it comes to anti-war and imperialism and all that stuff. But then during one of our interviews, he mentions climate change. Like, you know, he believes, and I'm like, I didn't feel there was a point for me to really. Why should I don't like to debate. You know, that's the thing. I'm not much of a debater, so I'm like, I just kind of ignored it. And let's get back to the empire stuff. And so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I can appreciate that. It depends on what the point of a given conversation is. And if the point is to debate climate change, then yes, get into it. But if the point is to talk about the war or what have you. I've talked to Eve Engler myself. And yeah, I didn't talk about climate change because I'm not interested in his view in climate change. And it's not unlikely to convince me or the audience. But it's a good point and well taken. And let's talk about some of the issues that you cover. Because, for example, one that constantly comes up in your conversations is the concept of the digital ghetto, as you call it, the digital gulag, as I refer to it. Of course, as our listeners know all too well by now, this idea of the bars of the digital prison going in around us, the digital IDs, vaccine passports, the CBDCs, etc. Why is that such a pressing issue for you? Why does it come up in so many of your conversations?
Well, you asked me before the interview, you know, some seminal interviews that I feel I've had, you know, I did the Francis Boyle one in 2020 that really blew up. But for me, one of my favorites was in June of 2020 when I interviewed Edwin Black, right, the Jewish historian. And he I'm using his term. His is my favorite out of all of the different options in algorithm ghetto, right? Which he compares it to the physical Jewish ghetto. And he, and I, for me, he's like a very serious guy. I just like the work that he does. And I just, you know, a lot of us have felt this, some to a greater extent. And you know, last year, 2 years ago, I was banned from Patreon. You've gone more, felt it more worse than I have. But last year, I was also banned from PayPal. And then I discovered it was the Department of Homeland Security when the documents came out from Mike Benz and his foundation and elsewhere, where you learn about DHS and CISA and how that all works. And then it was basically DHS telling PayPal, hey, ban this guy for life. And I'm like, and then that goes back to my, you know, biblical perspective with the Mark of the Beast system where you can't buy or sell. And for me, basically, the whole CBDC digital ID system is the beast system where for me, this is like the number one thing, because I feel like it's the number one threat because it's going to be in every single country. You can't escape it. And you won't be able to buy or sell it. I mean, they're going to get rid of cash. And then you literally, if you commit a thought crime, I mean, you have to be ideologically aligned with the regime. So whether it's you don't wear masks, you don't follow the corona or climate narrative or LGBT or war, you know, and the list is going to get longer, they'll just shut you off. And then you and I can see the infrastructure being built out here in Mexico. We all see it everywhere. They're building out public transport. They're slowly going to try to get rid of cars. And so you won't be able to travel, work, eat, none of that. And so that's why for me, that's the biggest, the most imminent threat.
So on the white pill, black pill spectrum, what shade of gray would you say that you are at this point?
No, I'm. See, this is where it gets a bit complicated with a lot of alternative media folks. You have to put us in different categories. And so, if you look at it from a material plane, I'm black pilled, but people kind of they'll complain about my black pilledness, but. In reality, I'm white pilled. My white pill is Jesus Christ, right? So it's like in this earth, I feel like it's going to be black pilled, right? The whole tribulation is just going to get worse and worse. And my approach is more like trying to ride the storm out, you know, preparing to go through the fire. So I am black pilled, but I'm also white pilled. But then, you know, there are people in alternative media who don't believe in Jesus or Christ. And then for them, I'm purely black pilled. So I think there has to be that nuance where I ultimately am white pilled. It just some people don't accept my white pill. So, you know, to each their own.
All right. Well, I've been concentrating on the podcast because, as I say, I've been listening to that for a couple of years now and getting a lot of interesting perspectives from it. But it's not all you do. You have articles. You have a radio show as well. Tell people about some of the other work you're doing.
Yeah. So I've been doing the podcast, and then a while back, I decided, you know, why not try to find people to write for me, you know, like what Ryan Christian does at Last American Vagabond and other outlets. And so, you know, I picked up Nikola Mikovic out in Serbia, Jose Nino down in Texas, Ian Davis, who just published for me on occasion. And so, you know, that comes out of my budget. And then I got offered back in a year and a half ago, March 2022, TNT offered me a gig. I guess they saw my podcast work and they're like, hey, and he thinks like us, you know. And so I've been riding the TNT radio wave ever since. And so I think soon we're going to go to, we might go to video too. So things are, you know, keep moving, advancing in the TNT radio world.
Awesome. And I guess geopoliticsandempire.com is probably the best link to give people. Are there any other places that you would direct them if they're interested in checking out your work?
No, that's the best place. And then I just switched my membership to Substack, which I haven't started developing yet, but I've been pleasantly surprised to see people already becoming free and paid subscribers. And I thought I'd throw in one more theme, the whole BRICS multipolarity thing. I think we've talked about this before, but I think that's also an important theme where I don't I think you've seen some of the same people that we talked to, like Riley and Rolo, and you should probably have Yuri Roshka on, the Moldovan politician, where, you know, he's been speaking out against this, and basically a lot of people coming to the same conclusion that it's the other side of the same coin. So anyways, yeah, geopoliticsandempire.com, and then I'm very active on the Geopolitics and Empire Telegram and Twitter. I've seen your perspectives on like Mines. You're like, give me a good reason to go on Mines. I still have my accounts open there, and I try to publish most of my podcasts on Gab, MeWe, Mines. Float, I think, just went defunct. So, yeah.
Unfortunate, but this is the way it goes when we're trying to create alternative structures. It's certainly not a straight and easy path. By the way, yeah, how is the deplatforming from PayPal and Patreon going? That's quite a double whammy and probably makes it a lot more difficult for people to support you. How do people support you at this point?
No, it's still fine because I still got Stripe. And so, you know, you find alternatives like DonorBox, which goes to Stripe, or Substack goes to Stripe. I still have Subscribestar. The options are getting less and less. But then I get worried when I hear about, like, you know, Canadian military veteran Jeremy McKenzie. In January this year, Scotiabank closes account, and I'm like, one of my banks in here in Mexico is Scotiabank, you know. Or Maria Zari Chow in Australia, I heard she got her bank account closed. So it's just like, I feel like, you know, that's soon. Nigel Farage, right? And so,
yeah, these are not just theoretical issues that might affect us someday in some far distant future. This is coming. This is why we are talking about it. And I'm glad that you are out there talking about it. I just really wanted to direct people's attention to your podcast, your website, so that people who haven't heard about it might check it out. As I say, there's a lot of different perspectives from a lot of different guests, and I think it's a valuable resource to have out there. So I salute you in what you're doing. I think we're going to leave it there for today. Thank you so much for your time.
It was a privilege to be on the Corbett Report.